Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with Patricia Favia, and this is the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Monthly Podcast Interview. On this program, we feature a variety of attorneys and experts in many areas of health law, litigation, and the regulation of healthcare professionals. Many healthcare practitioners think that marketing is a sole method to increase the number of patients in a medical practice. While marketing is much more than your collection of brochures and web pages. While our printed materials are important, our brand is really dictated by the opinions of others with whom we interact in our professions. Today we are talking to Patricia Favia. She's a healthcare marketing and branding professional who will discuss with us a list of 10 cost-effective marketing tips and tactics to boost our brand, keep patients happy, and reduce our medical malpractice risks. Again, on the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Monthly Podcast, we talk to people who intersect a variety of people in the area of healthcare, in the healthcare industry and arena, and marketing is certainly something that we talk about frequently on our podcast program, and also as well as you all will find information on our website and social media pages as we highlight opportunities for healthcare professionals to increase communication with clients and professionals and to reduce those medical malpractice risks with increased communication and other areas. So again, today we are focused on 10 marketing tips to keep our patients happy and decrease risks of being sued. General overview of what we'll talk about in our 30-minute interview today. We'll talk about communicating with patients and family members in and out of the healthcare setting. We'll talk about respecting the process of patients who are shopping for ideal healthcare professionals. We'll also talk about making your office an appealing place where patients and their time are valuable. Also, we'll talk about creating a system to request, receive, and respond to patient and family feedback. Again, I'm here with Patricia Favia, and she is an award-winning marketing, communications, and branding professional focused on helping healthcare industry leaders engage their full potential. Ms. Favia works with integrated marketing, communications, and advertising platforms to help professionals in the healthcare industry. In her career in healthcare marketing, Patricia Favia worked as a director in major health systems in Illinois. She earned a bachelor's degree from DePaul University and participates in the Graduate School of Business Continuing Education Program at Loyola University, Chicago. As we get moving today, a general disclaimer, any information on our program is not legal advice. Our program is for entertainment purposes and communication with professionals does not give rise to professional relationships. If you do have any specific questions about any of the content on this or any of our other programs, please call Illinois Professional Licensing Consultant at 773-631-4580, as well as to continue to talk about the discussion program today. Again, that number, 773-631-4580. 4580. All rights to this broadcast are reserved, and it's time to say good afternoon to Patricia Favia.
Yes, good afternoon, Nick. I'm happy to be here today, and thank you for that wonderful intro. And just to add a little bit more to that, I am a marketing consultant with extensive experience in the healthcare marketing industry, having worked with several large healthcare systems in Illinois. My areas of expertise include marketing of hospital and health system services and technology, building the brand, promoting physician practices, and marketing ambulatory sites of care. So quite diverse in the healthcare field.
Absolutely, and I think that it's such an important conversation for us to have today because, as we led off with, our marketing is a lot more than just our brochures and our websites. And we see people looking into marketing and talking about words, including advertising, branding, public relations. And sometimes it's a bit of a Venn diagram that it all sort of mixes together. And I'm happy that you are here to talk about some tips on how we can look at our marketing and our offices and our healthcare professions with sort of a holistic approach to really increase services for patients, make people happy, keep happy people coming back, and of course, as we're always talking about on our programs, trying to capture what leads to risks of malpractice claims and how to improve our communication with folks, because sometimes those communication breakdowns are what leads to problems in our healthcare practices. So we want everyone to be happy. So how do we, when we're going to talk to, well, I'm going to say this. Patricia, when you talk to people who come to you and they say, hey, I have a growing healthcare practice, I know that you work in marketing, I don't know where to start. How do you start that communication? How do you start the dialogue with them?
Well, I would start the dialogue with a little bit of education. And as you mentioned earlier, when most people hear the word marketing, they automatically, their mind jumps to billboards and ads and brochures and web pages and social media and press releases. And those tactics are important, but we can't forget about the whole customer satisfaction angle, because this is oftentimes overlooked. And so I've devised this list of 10, I would say, no-cost or low-cost tips to help build practices and to keep existing patients happy. So shall I just jump right in into what I consider to be the most important?
Let's go. And I have a sharpen the pencils, get ready to take notes. Let's go.
All right. I would consider the most important tip is to treat each patient respectfully. And so important that I think it's worth repeating. Each patient should be treated respectfully. Literature out there has shown that if a patient feels respected and believes that their doctor truly cares about them, they are less likely to sue the physician in the case of, any kind of incident. So my advice is to treat each patient in the same manner as you'd like to be treated. And this goes really for everyone in the office that a patient would interact with, the front desk team, the nurse, and, of course, the physician, his or herself. So how do you, what signifies respect to a patient? And, obviously there's some variability into how each person perceives respect. But I say in general, each patient should always be greeted with a smile and by their name, with a warm voice. I think an appropriate facial expression is important, and by this I mean, smile, have a pleasant expression on your face, nod when a patient is speaking, listen to the patient, don't act rushed, or, your attention should be on the patient during the course of the interaction. I think also very important is the tone of voice. And, your voice should be calm. It should be confident. It should be just very pleasant to the patient's ear. And I can give you an example of how a patient might have two different experiences when calling a physician's office to try and renew a prescription. And, I personally have seen this in the past before. So a patient may call in, let's say she's Mrs. Jones, and she asks for her prescription to be renewed. So one of the office staff members might say, Mrs. Jones, you'll need to see the doctor before renewing that prescription because it's been a year since you've been here. Can I make an appointment for you, please? And, if you answer in that tone, you are portraying a professional, a user-friendly, or rather friendly and caring message to the patient. However, on the other hand, if you get a response like, oh, you'll need to see the doctor before renewing that prescription, well, that is a totally different tone and conveys a negative and non-caring impression for the patient. And, is in effect treating the patient disrespectfully. So, tone of voice, facial expression, really being present in the moment have a great impact on what the patient thinks of you and your practice.
Absolutely. You know, also time. Respecting people's time is the one thing that I always think about, because we could be doing anything other than being where we are at a certain point. And regardless how much money we may make in the world, or how many birdhouses we will build with our time, our time is valuable, and it's so important to respect people's time as well. Well, let's talk about our next component of, and this is another one, a great, that costs you nothing to communicate with people and ask patients how they heard about you.
Yes, and the ultimate goal of this exercise is to track which marketing tactics are working for your practice, and then to devote your marketing dollars to those tactics that work best. This can be as simple as keeping monthly tallies broken out by potential referral sources. For instance, think of a simple chart. On the left-hand side might be the day that you're seeing patients. On the top, there might be different selections like patient heard about practice from a website, from your website, a referral program, word of mouth, an ad, billboards, a community outreach, health fair, and things of that nature. And it's as simple as checking off how the new patient has heard about you. It would be important to tally these on a monthly, quarterly, and even annual basis in order to adjust your marketing strategy such that you're using your limited marketing dollars to the best ability that you can. And let me give you an example here. So say a practice takes out a billboard, and I'm not necessarily advocating billboard advertising, but the billboard's been up for, say, 3 or 4 months as a test pilot. And during that time period, you don't get any responses from new patients or other patients that they came to your office because of seeing this billboard. So you would want to, you know, think twice about continuing that particular marketing initiative and perhaps shift those marketing dollars into another tactic.
Well, and absolutely, by creating a habit out of asking, communicating with people, that's something that I've seen we do in, you know, in addition to the healthcare industry and a lot of other professions. It's building those habits into your system of communicating with new patients or clients. And so it becomes a habit. You really are getting so much benefit out of that. And another habit that we can build into our systems is asking patients for their email address and cell phone number. Why is this so important in our marketing?
It's very important because you want to be able to communicate with them in the future. And it's also important to ask them, to ask their permission to email or text them in the future as well. So you may have noticed that texting patients to remind them about upcoming appointments has become a little more commonplace. So even if you don't have text marketing capabilities now, it's good to be able to collect that information and plan for the future. Having information such as a patient's email address will allow you to use email marketing for campaigns like annual exam reminders, mammogram reminders, and more. And email marketing is a very cost-effective tool, and you know, it requires less effort and time, say perhaps, than a direct mail campaign would. So it's another lower-cost marketing tactic that you can utilize to cross-sell existing services to your existing customer base.
Absolutely great advice. Now, as you're talking about, you know, we talked about treating the patients respectfully, asking the patients how they've heard about you, and asking for their email address and cell phone, and how they would like to communicate with you. This is all happening in a setting. So let's talk about the setting in which we can have good communications with our patients, and that is our office, where our staff and our doctors meet with patients. Let's talk about office appeal and how you would help people identify great opportunities to have the best appealing spaces.
Yeah, so I kind of like to compare this to the real estate market and what you call curb appeal with houses that are on the market to be sold. And this instead relates to your office's appeal to the customer. So I think it's very important to look at your office, waiting room, exam rooms, processes, and staff with a fresh eye, at least annually. And perhaps it would even be helpful for most people to bring in a spouse or another unbiased third party, someone who is not in the office on a regular basis, because they'll tend to notice more than someone who is in the office every single day. I would say the office should look clean and modern. Why, you might ask? Because oftentimes a patient will connect modern facilities with a modern approach to healthcare. So if an office is dusty and cluttered, the patient may construe this as an antiquated practice. Also very important and part of the whole office appeal are the office hours, which should always be convenient for target patients. For instance, if you're targeting working folks and the office does not have any evening or weekend hours, then it is not convenient for that particular population. So you have to keep that in mind. Furthermore, your front desk team is the face of your practice and should be friendly and helpful. And above and beyond that, they should be trained in various techniques that, as mentioned earlier, that would indicate to the patient that, you know, their needs are being taken into consideration. For instance, talking about one of the prime or pet peeves of a patient is when they come up to perhaps the front desk and the front desk staff is chit-chatting amongst themselves and, you know, you're pretty much being ignored at the check-in point. And, you know, the moral of the story here is that when a patient approaches the registration area, the team should stop all other conversation and handle the patient's needs. Similarly, if you're taking care of a customer and the phone rings, if there's no one else available to answer the phone, I would recommend picking the phone up, asking the person to hold, and finish the registration with the patient who is standing before you. So once again, it's treating the patient in the same manner that you would like to be treated. You would like their full attention to be on you at this particular point.
Absolutely agreed. And Patricia, perception really is reality when it comes to patient satisfaction and how people feel when a customer service situation. And I cannot reinforce anymore the importance of all the details within your healthcare practice. Again, from how you are as a doctor to who is the person to see you to the tables and chairs they sit on to what's available for them to read, whether there's a TV on the wall. All of these things can create a good patient satisfaction and good feeling. Because again, perception is reality. And our next thing we're going to talk about, again, with patient satisfaction, is the wait time. Wait times. I remember as a kid sometimes going to the doctor and waiting a long, long, long time. And I wonder how much technology has increased decreased the wait times and increased the ability to see patients more effective with scheduling. But what can we learn and what should we think about patient satisfaction and wait times?
Well, wait times are another, key pet patient peeve, according to all the research that's out there these days. So, even though it might be a little bit tricky to try and collect the information in the various stages, how long a patient is waiting in the various stages of his or her appointment, I think it's an exercise that can be done for purposes of quality improvement in the office. So by this I mean that you should be tracking when a customer arrives to the office, when his or her appointment is, when they're taken into an exam room, and when the doctor arrives, and important to, along the way, communicate all delays to the patient, along with a logical reason if possible. The physician may even ask about a patient's wait time or experience when they first come into the office, because this does show concern for the patient's time as well, and once again allows for process improvement. So let me give you an example of a perceived dissatisfaction, patient dissatisfaction due to a long wait time. I, in fact, recently had a 3 o'clock appointment. I was taken into the exam room at maybe 3:20, saw the doctor close to 4 o'clock. There was no communication about the delay. I popped my head out every now and then and asked, oh, will the doctor be coming in soon, if there was someone walking down the hall? And they, you know, I got a couple of different answers, ranging from, oh, you're the next one, to it's really hard to say. So to me, you know, almost an hour wait before seeing the doctor was not acceptable. And I, you know, of course, I do know that sometimes emergencies occur and a doctor might need to take care of another patient first. I totally understand that, but that didn't seem to be the case in this particular instance. So on this day, I had an early dinner appointment and in fact, was late for the dinner. I was supposed to drive with a group of individuals and needed to, you know, change plans and meet them at the restaurant. And so, you know, I was late for my evening engagement, which, you know, didn't serve to make me feel any better towards the practice at that particular point. So I think it is key to try to keep your schedule on time and allow enough time in your schedule to see patients, as well as explaining wait times, you know, if there is a logical explanation, or at least let the patient know that, you know, you haven't forgotten about them and, you know, you hope to be with them in 10 minutes or in 15 minutes or whatever the case might be.
And it all goes right back to our number one topic point, which was treat patients respectfully and being respectful of their time. And I just wonder, Patricia, in the future, what types of technologies may help us in healthcare to alleviate some of those things, keep people in the know of when they're going to see their doctor, why there's a delay, because I've also been the person left in a room wondering if anyone was ever going to come back, wondering if they even knew that I was there. So moving on to something that talks about technology, reminders about phone calls and text messages and how that can impact our revenue structure as well.
Yeah, it's very important to send out reminder calls or texts to a patient because that will help keep your revenue on track. Preferably, you'd want to make contact with the patient about 2 days in advance so that you can attempt to refill the appointment if the patient's not able to keep the appointment. Generally speaking, I see that most practices may be calling the day in advance to remind a patient about an appointment or text the day in advance. Particularly with a call, the patient may not see that call until after work that evening. And in most cases, the office will already be closed and it's already within, you know, your 24-hour cancellation period. And they might not be able to call until the next morning and reach someone to explain that they need to, you know, perhaps move the appointment. And then, you know, there is a time slot that you are not able to refill at that point. So I think the two-day window, you know, for in order to be able to capture the revenue from the appointment is advisable. And also I think it's useful during the time of the reminder call or the reminder text to remind the patient to bring in their insurance card and their license and or state ID. Because, you know, those, once again, are two items that a patient may forget to bring to the appointment, and then it, you know, creates a lot of issues with processing all of the paperwork appropriately.
You know, this makes me think about and reminds me that when patients are coming in to see a doctor, this is not something they necessarily do day to day, day in and day out, where things that we do as professionals day in and day out are just like riding a bike to us. they're not necessarily, that's not the experience that patients may have. So again, that reminder might help set them at ease, knowing that the doctor cares about their appointment. You know, some people might have forgotten the appointment. Like, things can happen in life. People get busy. There's all these opportunities to communicate. That's what I see. A lot of opportunities with everyone involved to communicate makes for better relationships. Now, also, when we're talking more about the operations, tell us about keeping our operations in order so as not to waste promotional dollars and what you mean by that tip.
Okay, this means that, you know, all of the items or tips that we've talked about thus far should be in place and working smoothly before expending dollars on promoting the practice. Because if a patient comes into an office that's disheveled, if they're greeted by unfriendly staff, if their appointment is running really late, then that is not a good patient experience. They may not come back to your office. They may relay negative word of mouth to other friends and family members. And if you're throwing promotional dollars at an operational situation which is not up to snuff, then you are in effect wasting those marketing promotional dollars. So your operations need to be in order. Things should be running smoothly before you spend dollars on advertising or, you know, online ads or whatever the case might be. Operations first.
We have one chance to make that first impression.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Absolutely. Another opportunity that we have to make that impression, whether the person is first time seeing us and encountering us in our healthcare practice or office, it may be a website. Again, today people will ask referrals from their friends and family, people they know, like, and trust, and they may see, go see Dr. So-and-so. They want to go to a website. What are some tips for website and brochures and marketing materials?
Yeah, I think at a very minimum, a practice needs to have a basic website and a brochure, or I'll just call it a profile card because that's even a quicker read. These days, you have a website to legitimize your business. I mean, everyone needs to have a website. Otherwise, the customer may think, oh, you know, is this real? Is this a scam? You know, everything out there, you have to be very careful these days. So in addition, a profile card, which may contain your photo, may contain your medical education background, your office philosophy, office location and hours, having a piece like that to distribute, to make available in your office and to distribute in the community, or say perhaps at Chamber of Commerce meetings that you might attend or other community organizations, or perhaps a community health fair, having materials out there like this that a potential customer could take back with them is useful to the practice. And in addition to that, if you are one who utilizes community health fairs in order to grow your business, and I do recommend this tactic, then you may want to look into, just an inexpensive, I'll call it a tchotchke or a giveaway that has your office name, or your name, your office phone number, and website address on it, and you hand your profile card and a little giveaway to a potential customer, and it keeps you top of mind to these individuals.
Next, also, as we're talking about maintaining that top of mind awareness and we're looking at internet marketing, in addition to websites, we also should be mindful of that Health Grades bio page. And also, after we talk about that, Google Plus and Yelp, we have several minutes left. We're spilling a little bit over on our time, but that's okay. What should we know about Health Grades first?
Okay, I'll try and summarize these two areas as quickly as I can. It's not only Health Grades, but it's also the hospital that physician is on staff at, for them to be aware of the hospital's physician referral tool. And this is usually online and a call-in mechanism, and important for healthgrades.com also. And this would be to make sure that your profile is up to date, that there is a photograph. Customers looking for a new doctor wants to see what the doctor looks like. They want to know where you went to medical school, where your residency was done, if you're board certified, what your office philosophy is. Health Grades, in fact, also lists, you know, any kind of lawsuits that might be pending or come into play. So there are many other sites beyond these two, but I would definitely start with the hospital physician referral tool because it's low-hanging fruit, and then the healthgrades.com. Now, when you go to healthgrades.com, you enter in your name, and you're taken to a page that, you know, hopefully has your photo and a nice complete bio. There's also an indicator there that'll say, are you the physician? You know, if so, click here to update your profile. And then you need to set up some sort of password, of course, because, you know, they want to ensure that it's only the doctor or the doctor's office making edits to sites like this. And then you can go in there and update, you know, various parts of your profile when the time comes. And then also, and speaking of other online tools, you should check your Google Plus business listing as well as any Yelp or Google Plus reviews. Your Google Plus business listing should have, or if someone were to Google your office, this will generally appear, your business listing, on the right-hand side of the page, if you've claimed your business and if you've updated your information. And it'll have a link to your website, some photos that connected to your office. And these could be photos that patients have, you know, included online. So you want to ensure that you review these photos and that they present your office appropriately, as well as the Google Plus listing also includes your address, your hours of operation. So this, too, again, you want to make sure you claim your business, that you have access to this information so that you can go in there and edit the information when it needs to be edited. And then, you know, this is the age of people reviewing everything, you know, everything and anything, restaurants, clothing, you know, physician office visits, plays, whatever the case might be. And if you have negative Yelp reviews or negative Google Plus reviews, you should pay attention to these because they can do harm to your business. I'm going to give an example. Like if you look at your Yelp reviews, and this just involves going to Yelp, and, you know, once again, putting in the name of your business. And you can see if your general star rating, which can be anywhere from 1 to 5, you can see where your star rating is. And if you're seeing a low rating, a lower rating, say in the 2 range, your goal is to try and secure several more positive reviews that will show up first in the listing of reviews and will help to pull your rating up. So the way you can do this is you can send an email to your patients thanking them after a visit and asking them to review you on Yelp, or I have even seen some practices have an iPad available in the office, and they'll ask patients to review their care right there and then. You know, that can sometimes be a little bit tricky to do because a patient is, you know, generally relatively eager to get out of the office. So Yelp, you know, very common review site. Google Plus reviews are a little bit trickier because you do need to have a Google account in order to be able to go in there and review a business. So these are all things that you should be cognizant of. You should be checking out your Yelp, Google Plus, et cetera, reviews, Health Grades reviews on a regular basis and working to enhance those reviews in the event that they need to be enhanced.
You know, all of these things, Patricia, sound like so many great, easy, cost-effective tools, and I can see that some people are writing down this list and may think, wow, this is a lot to do in my list, but it's really not. It's really simple. A lot of these things all sort of dovetail in building that great habit of great customer service, great customer care. And when we just think about that, and really focus on that, we're going to improve our healthcare practice. Any final thoughts or bits of advice for people out there who are wanting to know more about this and what next steps they can also take.
Well, that concludes my, presentation or comments or conversation for the day. And I know that you did mention at the beginning of the show that if there are any questions, to contact, a phone number that you specifically listed. So I suppose that is the best route to go at this point in time. And, perhaps you'd like to provide that number again to all of our listeners.
Absolutely. That telephone number for the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants is 773-631-4580. Again, 773-631-4580. And I would also like to remind the people who are listening to these podcasts, whether finding them in social media, newsletter, or another way someone shared it with you, it is always appropriate and kind to share these with other people because we just don't know who's looking for exactly this type of advice. Patricia, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Nick, and have a wonderful evening.
You as well. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants. And again, the telephone number for more information, 773-631-4580. Bye-bye now.